We're going to talk flaring today right here on the News and Views Radio Network. Good morning to all of you. There, of course, was a flaring task force that was put together to give recommendations on what to do. They came out with part of what they found already. Ron Ness, Eric DeLay are with me right now. Ron is head of the North Dakota Petroleum Council. Eric, you're on the task force. You're co-chair, right?
That's correct, yep.
And tell them what you do in the industry.
So I work for EOG Resources. I'm the director of government relations.
Right. So you know what it's like to be sitting in front of a microphone every now and then. It's fair to say. But here's the deal that everybody can come to this thing with an agreement on. We would wish there was less flaring in Western North Dakota. Fair, Ron?
That is exactly correct, Joel. There's nobody that doesn't want the flares to be reduced and minimized, especially the oil operator and the mineral owner. That's money.
And Eric, one of the biggest hurdles before we get into the recommendations on how to achieve the goals is how to move the product.
That's correct. And really the longest time delay to get the product to market is getting right-of-way permission from the surface owner, the landowner. So our studies show that that's an average of 180 days to get that contract signed with a surface owner.
That's actually a good day. As somebody who built rural water systems and put a lot of pipeline in the ground, it's not easy to get an easement to put a pipe across somebody's land. They value and they hold the rights to their land very sacred.
Absolutely, and we understand that completely, and it's important. The landowner's really important in the equation.
So let's talk about, first off, Ron, give people background on the task force itself, and then I'm going to go to Eric for where the study is going right now.
Well, we were essentially called in by the governor in early September and told that, we either fix this or he will. And our concern about the he will statement is that when government fixes things, they usually use a one-size-fits-all approach. And when you look at the 15,000 square miles of the Bakken, and all of the different types of systems, the $6 billion that we've already put in, that's $1 billion a year that we're putting into natural gas infrastructure, that it's hard to do that. So as an industry, we came together. We've met over 20 times, put together this report. There's been a lot of frustrations and concerns amongst industry members, but we really came back yesterday, I think, with a report that's got a lot of meat to it, a lot of tangible to-do lists for industry, for the state, for the legislature, and a number of action items, I think, that are going to make a long-term impact on flaring.
Eric, what did you hand? Where are you at right now?
Well, so after 5 months of a lot of gnashing of teeth and bloodletting, we came up with target capture goals. And so in 2 years, we'll be at 85% capture of all gas produced. And Joel, what's really important is we're not restricting the growth of oil production is what we're proposing. So we're not asking the state to regulate the number of rigs or anything like that, but we will go to 85% capture in 2 years and then 90% capture in 6 years. We think that's doable. And even 95% in that six-year time frame is achievable if we can get all the stakeholders, which we're calling the state agencies, the NDIC, the tribe, and, of course, the landowners in on that solution. So we think we can achieve 95. That's going to be a tough thing to do, but we can get there if everybody puts their shoulder to the wheel.
Where are we at right now?
We're at about 70% capture, 71% capture. That's based on North Dakota Pipeline Authority data for November. So
70, let's use 70 as your where you so you're saying in 2 years you're going to capture 15% more of what's being flared.
That's correct.
Okay. And you're going to do that through piping it to places where then it can be processed and moved forward.
That's correct. Really, the processing, the midstream companies, the people that own the processing plants, they're working hard. They have built out expansions. The Hess Corporation and their Tioga plant is just done a very large expansion that comes back on in February, so that'll help relieve that. So over the next 2 years, projects that are in the pipeline, that's a pun intended, will be coming online. So that will help us reduce it. Now, again, the right-of-way, getting that pipe out to the well location for the gas gathering, that's still the long pole in the tent, if you will. And that's super important.
Ron, you've hunted every corner of this state. You know more people in this state than probably even I do. When you look at this, do folks really understand it? Other than the, hey, we can see the flaring from space, and it draws an image in their mind. Do they really understand, do you believe, what it takes to build the infrastructure to get your arms around this problem?
No, I don't, because I don't think I really did until we've been into the nuts and bolts of this thing with all of the experts. It's a very complex gas stream that we have in North Dakota that's unique to anywhere else in the world. Hess built that, building that huge gas plant up there, it's serial number one of one on their equipment. You got to be able to manage this. But, you know, what I'd like to talk about is we can look at the goal as half empty here, or we can turn it over and look at the opportunity. If we've had a major natural gas pipeline that took all this gas to the Gulf Coast, we wouldn't be talking about potentially $2 billion fertilizer plants in Jamestown and Grand Forks.
All right.
Yesterday, the governor, we were talking about the need to utilize this gas in North Dakota. This is liquid-rich, world-class gas. How about the propane shortage right now? How about creating an LNG or CNG opportunity where grain elevators or farmers can hook this gas truck basically up to the back end of your grain dryer and run your grain dryer all fall on CNG or LNG? Those are just the ideas that are starting to emerge, and they're only emerging because there's a huge economic opportunity out there to capture this gas and then utilize it after it's processed. So there's a study going on by the Empower Commission, which is going to look at the niche opportunities in marketing in North Dakota. I think that's going to be a big part of this, and that's going to probably become the legislative piece, maybe the economic development piece, because the great thing about this is you don't need to be close to that gas production to utilize this gas in a secondary chemical type business that helps our agriculture across North Dakota. It can be in Enderlin, or it can be in Cavalier or Oaks or Tallna, North Dakota. There's great opportunities ahead, and I think this could be our next big economy movement.
Eric DeLay is with us, co-chair of the task force that's looking at the goals that they've set forward here. Eric, people, well, myself included, don't always understand the difference between what you are flaring off in natural gas versus what's needed in the eastern part of the state all over the place right now in propane and in other ways. What can this be used for? What can this, you know, Ron just mentioned the fact that one of the big reasons we're talking about a fertilizer plant in Jamestown and talking about a fertilizer plant in Grand Forks is just simply because of this. So just from an industry standpoint, how valuable is this to you and what can it be used for?
Well, it is very valuable. You have to realize that the wellhead, Joel, that when the natural gas comes, it comes out of solution out of the oil. So if you go back to your high school chemistry, when it's at pressure 2 miles down below the surface of the earth and you bring that oil to surface, the associated gas comes out of solution. So that natural gas has a lot of liquids in it, as Ron was mentioning. So that has to be processed. So when you think of natural gas coming into your home, that's been processed. So the natural gas liquids have to be processed at a plant. So you have to knock those out. So that continual supply that needs to go into fertilizer or some of the applications that Ron was talking about still needs to be processed. So what we can do now is knock out the natural gas liquids, the NGLs, on the web, at those plants, and then send a dry gas, is what it's called, a processed gas down to the purchaser or the user of that. So it's a very valuable, very valuable commodity.
Ron, you understand North Dakota politics quite well. Do you think that what you put forth here will meet what the governor's message to you was?
Well, I thought the reaction to yesterday's meeting really across the state, if you look at the newspaper reports, the TV reports, really even from our critics, they were quite surprised at what we laid on the table yesterday. Sometimes when you've got everybody a little bit mad, which we've got over 500 members in the Petroleum Council now, and not everybody was happy with this, but we came to the decision we got to move forward with this, and I think that it's a plan that's got some teeth, it's got something for everybody in there to work on, and especially driven, of course, by the industry, the producers, and it's something that we just have to do.
Well, in fairness, other states, this would be solved before you'd... I mean, if you go to Oklahoma and Texas, you can't flare. Am I right about this?
No, that's not correct. You can flare in those states.
How long?
Most of those states, what happens is that, of course, they're building these oil plays over old old infrastructure. So the infrastructure is right there. But if you look at Texas and the oil portion of the Eagle Ford, they're flaring 15% of their gas.
How long?
I don't know.
Is there a requirement by regulation how long you can do it?
They do, Joel. I don't know exactly what that is in Texas. I think it's probably around 90 days or so.
That was my point. And my point is, obviously, you're going to have to flare because you don't know, you know, but... And you will have flaring with this, with the goals you set forth here. But there is a system in place where you are required to take care of flaring, right?
Yes, at some point in those other states, there is. And North Dakota has the same thing. Right now, today, we can flare by statute. We can flare for a year. So after a year, we have to go into the NDIC and explain why we're not capturing that gas. So that is on North Dakota books right now. So...
But what's happening in North Dakota right now is you're going in and explaining why you're flaring. And you're saying, look, I've got to build a pipeline to somewhere, someplace that can process. I don't have the processing capabilities. I can't get the easements for the pipeline. I need to flare. They're saying go ahead and flare. That's what's happening in North Dakota.
Well, that's true. And you have to realize we basically use a baseline of January 2006. So almost 8 years ago is when the Bakken kicked off. We're you know, roughly calling it that. In the Eagle Ford in Texas, they have huge markets to send gas to. They have the Houston refining market.
Right.
They have the Corpus Christi. And then in the era where the Eagle Ford is now, there was a lot of underutilized processing plant capacity. So Texas can lay pipe on the ground. They have eminent domain in Texas. They can construct year-round. So those issues... And they're still flaring 15% in the Eagle Ford. North Dakota, basically in January 2006, had almost close to zero infrastructure to handle the quantity of gas. We were defining the field. We were understanding how liquids rich it was. That's all happened in the last 8 years. Also, as we become more successful in the way we drill the wells, we're getting more reserves out of wells. We're going to multi-well pads. So... When we were originally drilling one or two wells on a pad, now we're going 4, 6, 8 wells on a pad. So every time you drill those additional two wells, you know, that puts more pressure on the processing. So that just takes time and investment.
You're pulling up a lot of more natural gas. Ron Ness is with us, as is Eric DeLay. Eric is Task Force co-chair on the flaring issue. Eric, what else was in this that you presented? I know we're talking, Ron, you've got a hotline here as well, right?
We do, Joel. One of the things, of course, on April 1st, the state of North Dakota will be the first state in the nation to regulate gathering systems. And gathering systems are those low-flow lines that connect the wells to the tanks out in the fields. And it's much like coming off the XL or the MDU line, the line that comes into your house. Well, those are going to be regulated, which no other state does. And that's 18,000 miles of existing pipeline in the ground that's going to become regulated, and a lot more to come. But what we've suggested here is that the Industrial Commission develop a pipeline hotline, because a lot of the concerns that we hear about not giving right-of-ways and granting right-of-ways goes along with erosion or reclamation issues and you know, contacting the wrong person out in the field who doesn't really, no longer, you know, they might have leased that land or gotten that easement, and now you got somebody else that did the pipeline, or the operator's not the midstream company. So we're suggesting the Industrial Commission create this pipeline hotline in which you can download pictures, and you can create kind of a regulatory mechanism in which the company will be contacted. Because right now, a lot of these things either go through myself.
And that goes to the Public Service Commission?
That would go to the Oil and Gas Division.
Okay. So Len Helms would have that data that people submit to him in his hands. If he wanted to send people out to say, what's going on here, he'd have it.
That's right. He'd have everything right there, and he'd have the company contact information, and they can make this work. And this is a big deal to surface owners and landowners.
Eric,
this,
is the work of your task force done?
No, the bulk of the work's done right now. So NDIC is going to go back and think about it, our proposal, and look at it. And then we're going to probably reconvene later in the spring once they have an idea where they're going to go forward. We put some milestones in there as when we think some of the actions that we offered up need to start happening. So the NDIC needs to come back to us and say, yeah, we're going to move forward with that.
So I want to make sure that I, in particular, and the listeners get this. The governor kind of threw the gauntlet down and said, let's deal with the flaring issue. He formed a task force. There was controversy over the task force. Forget about that. The task force is here. You co-chaired the task force. The task force goes out. You get together in a bunch of meetings and say, he's serious about this. We got to deal with this flaring issue. You put together a product. It's now headed to the oil and gas division in North Dakota. They're going to review that. They're going to come back to you and say what they like, what they don't like. Then when all that's done, you're going to end up sitting in front of the governor saying, here's a plan.
Yes, that I think that's it. I would just correct.
Can
one
you tell
thing
I was
that?
Back in my old Senate
yeah,
days, back
good.
In the committee?
Yeah,
I mean, okay. I mean that's really the timeline here, though, right?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, in fairness to you, that's how you're going to accomplish this goal.
Yes.
All right. And Ron, in other words, it isn't over in terms of submitting or inputting into this. That's the point.
No, that is the point. The point is in the deliverables, and I think we understood we have to deliver. And maybe the most important, you can put a lot of things on the paper, but I'll tell you, at the top of the mindset of the management of these companies now is to reduce this flaring.
Hey, Ron, just as an old favor, I need a booth at your convention in Bismarck. Oh, wait, I need 10 booths.
Joel, I think there could be a black market out there. And you know, we sold out. I had a woman with a Chinese woman call me yesterday morning at 9:04. I've been up since 2 a.m. waiting to get a booth at 9 o'clock. And I said, they sold out in 4 minutes, 3.5 minutes.
For the good people of Bismarck, build a bigger convention center.
800 people logged in at 9 o'clock trying to get a booth yesterday. So hope to see you there. And, you know, that
we'll
we're going to do some free public education sessions during that again.
We'll be there. We'll make sure we bring it right out to the very people listening. Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, Joel.
When we come back, what do you do with homeless kids in this Bakken play? We'll talk about it. Oh, yeah.